Welcome everyone to the first Funny Fucks episode of 2024. I know it's late, but Happy New Year, everybody. Just a quick announcement before we get into today's episode. I'm so excited to announce that Craft Comedy has just been growing and growing since we started, and I want to update you on our new show schedule for 2024. We have a great lineup of weekly shows for y'all. Every Friday, we're at Rendezvous Tavern with Craft Comedy, hosted by Lamar Devon at 9 p.m. Every Saturday, we have Jokes on Oak at Oak Street Brewery at 8 p.m. And every Sunday, you can catch Courtyard Comedy at Courtyard Brewery, and that is a combination showcase and open mic. So if y'all want to come check out comedy or tell some jokes, come see us at Courtyard Brewery every Sunday. As for our monthly shows, every second Wednesday, you can catch us at Nola Brewery at 7 p.m., every second Friday at Faubourg Brewery at 8 p.m., and y'all, we have a new addition to our monthly schedule. Every first Wednesday of the month, we'll be at Happy Raptor at 6 p.m. This is an early show, y'all, so come join us for some happy hour comedy. And of course, all of this info can be found on my website, JorgeVelasquezComedy.com, or check out craftcomedy.show. All right, y'all, let's get into it. On today's episode, I have LA comedian Ryan Radizinovich. Ryan and I met and became friends a few years ago when he was down here in New Orleans doing comedy. So I was in town this last December for the holidays. So while I was down there, Ryan and I met up at the East Los Angeles Public Library, right in the heart of my old neighborhood. We had a great talk. He recounts his journey in comedy and gives us an inside look into the Los Angeles comedy scene. So let's do it, you guys. Here we go. This is me and Ryan Radizinovich. What's up, everyone? I am here with Ryan Radizinovich. We are in the East Los Angeles Public Library. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So Ryan and I met doing stand-up. He came out to New Orleans. And was it at Ugly Dog?
Yeah, it was at Ugly Dog. Yeah, that was cool.
And then, I just thought you were so cool.
You were cool people. And then I think you were just chilling, blazing it. And I was like, hey, dude, do you know where I could get some weed? And you were like, yeah, dude.
You are from Louisiana, right?
I am. From a lot of places, but I spent a good portion of my childhood in Sulphur, Louisiana, Calcasieu Parish. My family moved to Tacoma, Washington. I was there for about a year and a half, and then I split to California, kind of pursue my dream of working in the entertainment industry.
What's wrong with you?
Oh, a lot of things.
What is your specific damage that got you into this?
My problem is, you know what? It's just I always need approval from strangers. I guess I just didn't get hugged as a kid. Or like, I didn't have a dad growing up. I met him when I was like 14, but I was already a man at that point. So yeah. I had like a stepdad, and my mom raised me mostly. And I guess I always just sought approval and affection from the crowd.
Yeah,
I always wanted to get a reaction from people, and I don't know what it is inside of me that desires that and still does to this day. But yeah. I freaking need it, dude. It's like a drug,
dude. I think we all do. Just being on stage and being the focal point, like it's so intoxicating.
It really is. Like, I always liked being a part of an ensemble cast. That was fun because yeah. I always felt like I would take the role and like make it my own mm-hmm. and try to shine and make it funny. But there's just something so much more gratifying about stand-up. I came out here, you know, at the end of eighth grade, beginning of high school, came out to LA, and I knew I wanted to be in this industry. I knew I loved comedy. So in high school, I would ditch school and go watch tapings of Mad TV.
Okay.
And I was really into it. I did improv, you know, did in high school and college. Loved improv, and I thought that was kind of the direction I was headed to yeah. be like a comedic actor. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't that great of an actor, as I found out in community college. They're like, you're not the best actor, but you know what? You're a character, and you're a lot of fun yeah. to watch. So I'm like, I have to figure out how to parlay this into a career.
Yeah. What was your problem with acting? Or rather, like, what couldn't you do?
I guess I just was too much facial expressions. I was too much of a mugger, and I guess I still am as a stand-up, but that's part of my brand of comedy. Like, some people don't like, they think it's hacky to like make faces and do it, but my act outs are all about the facial expressions, the reactions, and bringing a story to life.
Dude, I get it. I've been a theater kid my whole life. Yeah, in fact, we're actually sitting right across the street from where I first started theater, my old middle school, Griffith.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so I started there, and then when I got to high school, I was in every production right from the beginning. So yeah, as a theater kid, for me, stand-up is just basically theater.
It is.
And I use all the things that I learned. Like, I try not to move on stage unless I have a purpose.
Oh, right? Smart.
I use my face. I use every part of my body to tell these jokes.
Different strokes for different folks. If you can go up there and be deadpan, good for you. But for me, I want to be alive. I want people to get an experience. I want them to experience me as a performer.
Yeah.
And take something, you know, home with them. Like, wow, that guy was, you know, the way he told that story and he involved me in his story. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, it was really memorable. And recently, in the past 6 months, even longer maybe now, I have kept the mic in the stand.
Really?
And I've used both hands now, and then moving with purpose. That's another thing. So yeah. I will drag the mic. I will move it. I will pick it up. I will sometimes, if I need to take it out of the stand, I'll take it out for a certain story. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that just centers me so much more. And
interesting.
It's so crazy. I never thought I'd be one of those guys.
Yeah.
Mic in, you know, in the stand. But I just like it better because I never know what to do with my hands with the free hand.
Yeah.
And I never know how to hold the mic. Should I hold it like up here? Should I hold it like I'm brushing my teeth? Like, what should I do? But I keep that damn mic in the stand, and I just get more dialed in that way.
It's so interesting. One of the first pieces of advice that anybody gets as a stand-up comic is take that mic off the stand and move the stand off to the side.
Oh, yeah. It took 10 years for me to get comfortable enough to do that. Naturally, I talk with my hands.
Mm-hmm.
So to keep it in the stand and lower it to my level, it felt so much more natural. And then I have a drink in my hand, like I'm at a party, you know, got a drink in one hand, put it down on the stool, pick it back up, have a drink in between laughs. And I do use the mic stand for emphasis. I'll shake it.
Yeah.
I'll do stuff with it. I'll drag it. I'll pick it up like a damn bazooka on my shoulder. I'll do whatever I want with it, you know, in the moment that feels right. And I feel like that's just another element. And Tony Hinchcliffe does it, and the master of it is Butch Bradley. He's mm-hmm. out in Vegas headlining, and that guy owns the space.
Yeah.
Totally. When you watch him, he's got the mic stand in one hand. He's got it over his shoulder. He's dragging it like a dead body across the stage. The mic's in the stand. The mic's out of the stand. And it just, when you watch him, you're just like, wow, this guy commands your attention, and he does whatever he wants. It's up there, and I want to have that level of creative freedom and expression.
That's cool, man.
Give it a try.
I mean, like, as a host, there are definitely lots of times where I'm doing a joke and the mic is on the stand
mm-hmm.
so that I can go from the punchline into the next comic. And it does feel a little freer.
I recommend it. You don't have to be married to that. Like, it doesn't have to stay there. It can come out, go back in, whatever you feel comfortable with.
Exactly. It doesn't have to be one or the other. It whatever fits the joke or the situation.
Experiment.
Yeah, man. So, how long have you been in stand-up?
This is going on 11 years. I started in 2008. I did stand-up from the time I was 23 till the time I was about 30.
Wow.
Took a three-year break. Went to law school.
Yeah.
Failed out of law school. Lasted a whole year. Didn't know what I was going to do with my life. I went back to working for my dad. He does construction. So I'm sitting there, you know, banging nails and roofing and doing manual labor. And I'm like, man, I was unhappy. You know, my friends noticed. They were like, man, you're so depressed. You used to be like so full of life and purpose. And, you know, why don't you get back into stand-up, man? And I was like, man, stand-up's bullshit. It's political. It's fucking, you know, I just was, I kind of was jaded at the time. Because I didn't win a couple contests that I thought I deserved to win.
Yeah.
You know, those are contests. I didn't...
Right.
When I look back at it now, I'm like, you're so stupid. The contests are rigged. You have to bring the most people.
Right. And that's all it is. I've had this conversation with so many comics who are like, I should have won that. I should have won this. I got robbed. And I'm like, dude, you realize that this is just a fucking show that someone put up.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have any actual hardcore judges.
It's not American Idol. It's not X Factor.
It's not. It's not. Dude, like, it's just a show that someone put on.
Yeah.
It's a gimmick. It's not an actual competition.
No, it's just a way to shove a bunch of comics onto a lineup that will bring people because they're incentivized. And I was so mad about that. I just kind of, you know, it was more than that. That set it off. And then the next show at Flappers, I was doing my crowd work, doing my thing, roasting these old ladies in the front. And one of them was a journalist for the Huffington Post. And she got mad and wrote like a two-page email to Flappers. rappers.
Oh my
like,
god.
Like, this guy's fucking ageist and sexist and all this terrible stuff. Oh, and they're like, Ryan, ease up off the crowd work. And I'm like, I'll ease up off the crowd work. I'm just not going to do comedy. How about that? And you guys, I'm done. I'm taking my ball and I'm going home. And I was, you know, maybe that was immature of me. And I, looking back on it now, I'm like, that's so stupid. I got so just hurt over that, and that I quit for 3 years, and I regret quitting for 3 years. Because I had to start over. But I started over with a new set of eyes, and my best friend, who's been my friend since, like, pretty much elementary school, he's a diehard comedy nerd, and he's like, dude, you gotta do what these comics do. They go grind open mics every fucking night.
Yeah.
And you don't do that. You, like, if you have a show, you'll do two or three mics that week to get ready for your show.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't live that life. Like, you need to go live that life. So I came back at 33. I did like 200 mics in the first like 100 days of stand-up.
Yeah,
and I didn't look back. And you met me sometime around like month three or four of my comeback.
Hell yeah.
And that was awesome. I was like, man, I'm gonna go on the road. I don't give a damn. Like, in my hiatus,
dude, I saw you and I thought you were fucking hilarious.
That's awesome, because I had already had the background, and it was just now just kind of like coming into my own as a performer. And I got lucky during that 3 years off. I work on set too. I worked as a PA and assistant director and whatever job they'll give me on set. And I worked on the Heart of the City, which was Kevin Hart's reality show.
Mm-hmm.
And I met Shoddy Feelgood from New Orleans and Carissa Copper and a couple other Southern comedians, and just, you know, shooting the shit, driving them around. Ivan Martin, another great dude from Baltimore. And then I added them on Instagram. And then when I came to Louisiana, I was like, hey, where can I get stage time? Shoddy's like, you want to open up for me?
Nice.
I'm like, yeah. And he was opening up for TK Kirkland, or he was hosting the show. He put me up first. He's like, I don't know about these young comedians. I don't know if you're going to like them. But, you know, supportive. They're trying their hardest. And he put me up, and I did pretty good. I did good
nice.
Enough.
Yeah.
I did good with my little 5 minutes. And I was just, you know, that kind of gave me a little more inspiration to just keep going at it.
It feels good when you do well on the road.
Yeah, it sure does.
It's different than killing it in your home city.
Yeah, like if I do a LA show, it's expected for me to kill it. But on the road, it's like a variable. You don't know
because everyone is so different. Every little city has their own attitude, I guess.
Yeah, totally.
Like sense of humor
and the way they look at life.
Yeah, right.
It's different.
And you never know if what you've written is universal enough to translate to all these cities. So it feels good.
Totally. Yeah, because I thought I'd come to Houston with my jokes from LA, and those people pulled back. They're like, whoa, 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 we're not that sexually liberated here in Houston. We're a little bit uptight. I thought these were going to be like kind of like hood folks, and they were like church folks.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I definitely didn't read the room right. I thought something else. I thought they were going to be, it's going to be like a raucous like hood crowd, and this was like a churchy crowd or something.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was able the second night to break through. The first night, the dude who booked us was like, you all right? I was like, I'll show you. All right. The next night, I fucking killed it. He was like, all right, you're pretty good, dude.
Yeah.
Like, thanks, bro.
So you came back from your break, and immediately you just start hitting the mics. Were you doing old material?
Old material and new material. Because I had been writing the whole time.
Yeah.
So I had been writing and...
So even during the 3 years, you didn't even stop writing.
No, I still wrote.
I think you knew you were going back to it.
I knew.
I think you knew.
I knew at some point I'd have to do it again. And writing through, it helped. But because I had taken joke writing classes before my break, and that really helped refine my game. Because before you're just, you know, when you start, you're just feeling it out. And you're like, well, is my intuition correct? And sometimes it is, but you need to refine those ideas into joke structure.
Yes.
And that the classes do help. Some comics love to shit on classes. Man, don't listen to those people. Take a class. Read a bunch of comedy writing books and take, you know, what applies to your life, and take what you can.
Just make sure you do your research.
Do your damn research and make sure it's from a reputable person who has some experience. Because, like, theory is one thing. Anyone can teach theory out of a book. But unless you have the practical knowledge and you know how to apply this knowledge from the book onto the stage, you know, you're not going to be a good teacher. So read the books. I'll recommend Jerry Corley. You can do his courses online. He's helped a lot of comics. there's some good teachers out there online who can help you. But yeah. just read as much as you can.
Even Google searches.
Google searches help. Like
what a joke is, how to write a joke.
Yeah, because you're not going to be able to figure it all out at once. You know, your style is your own, so you're going to have to find the tricks and stuff that fit into your own individual style.
I've helped out a lot of day one comics who are like, oh, this is your first open mic. And what I keep running into is joke structure. Like, okay, you have something funny to say, or you think it's funny. It's a funny situation, but I'm like, there's no joke.
Yeah.
You don't have a joke. This isn't in joke form, and a lot of people don't get it. I would say that, at the very least, Google joke structures.
Yeah, well, jokes should have an element of surprise. You know, that's a good joke surprises you, or there's a misdirection, takes you one way, and then jerks you another way, and I think that comedy at its core is things that are out of place.
Yeah.
Like, I remember taking a class at Cal State Fullerton. It was like American comedy. It was from like an anthropological standpoint. Mm-hmm. And they were like, well, the Pope in the pool. Why is the Pope in the pool funny? Well, it's because it's, you know, his holiness in a pool, and it's out of place. And so comedy at its core is things that are out of place. And someone recently told me that one good, like, impetus for writing is things that are unfair in life.
Yeah.
Like, why is this thing unjust? Why is this unfair? That's a good subject matter to explore. So that's one thing. If there's an injustice or something that's happening, you can really hit that topic. But at its core, surprise is everything. Stuff that's a fish out of water, stuff that's out of place. And I think you just go, you run from there.
What was it like to jump into comedy? Was it scary? How did you even go about figuring out what your first step was? Did you have jokes?
Man, I had impersonations, and I'm an impersonation comic, and that was my thing. I could do voices, and I'd go to high school parties. I'd make people laugh doing the voices. Do the Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'd do Michael Kim's mom, or just whatever. You know, whatever. They just have me impersonate people, so I knew I was good at that.
Yeah.
I just didn't know how to structure that into a set. Mm-hmm. But I started the hard way, man. I didn't know how to start, where to start. I didn't know about open mics. Yep. I went on Craigslist, and I was like, comedy. And I started just going to these comedy shows and hitting up these bookers. And it was like, doing comedy in the weirdest places, dude. I did comedy at coffee shops, people's garages, a fucking barber shop.
It's kind of the beauty of comedy. If you can set up a mic and a speaker, you can do it anywhere.
Kind of cool, yeah. And I think my first 6 years, I made $23. If you're out there not making money in comedy, it's fine, dude. It's fine. The money.
Can you say that one more time, though?
For my first 6 years in comedy, I made $23 in two separate shows. Okay.
It's nice to hear someone that's been doing this a long time be like, you guys, you're not gonna make any money. Don't expect it.
And don't.
I'm also happy to hear you mention how hard you hit open mics.
Oh yeah.
Everybody just thinks they deserve to get booked on a show.
But at least you're being a real one about it. Like, that's, you know, it is what the best comics still go to open mics.
You have to try new stuff out.
You can do the old shit sandwich where, you know, you have your good jokes up front, crap in the middle, great jokes at the end. But man, sometimes you got to think out loud on stage in a space where there's nothing at stake.
Yeah.
And that's why I still host an open mic 11 years in. I have a mic on Wednesdays at a weed dispensary in downtown LA just so I can run some off the wall stupid shit to these stoners. And if it gets them, if there's a chuckle, or, you know, they move their heads, I know they're at least listening. There might be something there.
Yes. That is where I get my shit done.
Yeah, it's good to stay sharp.
You know,
you gotta stay sharp. I feel like if you don't use it, you lose it. I know, because I hadn't done comedy in a week, and I went up last night, and I just didn't have that snap, that I wasn't as quick on the draw as I normally am. And it's, for me, it's just a week away from the stage.
Yeah.
I have to be up every single day, and like, and then there will be those, you know, show, those bigger shows where I have two shows a night, and that second show's always better than the first one.
Yeah, I still love open mics, and I will go to any open mic. Like, I don't care if you have a big audience, if it's nothing but comedians. I don't give a fuck if it's just me that shows up to the mic. Time on the mic is time on the mic.
It's true, yeah. You know? You got to speak these jokes into existence.
Yeah.
You know, you got to hear how it sounds out loud, because maybe on the page it sounds, you know, it's, oh, this is going to hit for sure. And then when you say it, you're like, ooh, it's a little bit blocky. It's clunky.
Yeah.
It doesn't flow right. So you got to say it out loud. I mean, to the people who can just get up there and wing it and it's funny, good for you. But some of us need a little extra work, a little polishing.
You got to work that shit out, man.
Yeah.
So what's it like being an LA comedian? This is your turf. Tell me what it was like starting, how it's changed.
I started, you know, just doing any type of show I could get, off of Craigslist, just hustling my ass off. And then I met this promoter named Cochino in Orange County, and this guy booked me on everything. I bring all my friends to his shows, and they were really good shows. He was always funny, great host, and good lineups. And at some point, I kind of just took another little break. I took maybe like 6 or 7 months off, because I'm like, I need to write more, man. I can't just survive on my impersonations. So I wrote jokes every single day, and I wrote every day for a year, and it helped me out so much when I came back. Was doing great, was doing all kinds of stuff, hit the open mic scene hard. I went to Flappers, took their writing classes, graduated Flappers University, great program. Flappers helped me out a lot, started doing some good shows. When I came back to comedy, I had just started doing the mics, right? Hitting the mics hard. There was this one place called the Amazing Comedy Theater. I'd always go to their mics. They were pay to play. And the guy booked me on a couple shows. He liked me. And one day he booked me on a show. He's like, all right, I'm going to give you 7 minutes. You bring three people. I brought three people, but they didn't RSVP in time. So he's like, I'm going to give you 3 minutes. Mm. And I'm like, well, these guys paid $20 a ticket. And he's like, all right, I'll give you five. I'm like, I want 7 minutes.
Yeah.
He's like, you can't have 7 minutes. You can leave. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to leave. We're out. This place. And that guy, he still has me blocked to this day.
Really?
But I should thank you. Thank you, Dan Bialik. You piece of shit. You fucking scumbag. Fuck you. But thank you, though, because without you, I would have never started my own open mic. I would have never started producing.
Hell yeah.
And I have produced over 120 shows in the past 3.5 years.
Fuck yeah, man.
So thank you very much for giving me my career. Because if I wouldn't have been producing a show in a parking lot in Downey, Jeff Garcia wouldn't have pulled up and invited me to go on tour with him, and I wouldn't be where I am now, which I just actually recently quit working for Jeff, but just creative differences. But he plugged me in, you know. I perform at comedy clubs all up and down California, Arizona. I'll be back in Louisiana this year. I was going to actually ask you when to come. Should I come after Mardi Gras? Should I come in March?
After. If you come anytime before, starting now.
Starting, okay.
You'll have fun in the city.
Right.
But anything comedy-wise, it will probably be low attendance.
Okay. Well, I'm coming in March, baby.
Yeah. Dude, comedy is so hard in New Orleans. I say New Orleans, you think drinking, jazz,
right,
party.
Music.
Nobody thinks comedy.
Not yet.
Not yet. I am trying to change that. Well, a lot of people are doing shows in the tourist areas, like the French Quarter. I'm trying to pull in locals.
Man, that's cool. Because Louisiana, I can say this, everybody's a character over there. So you would think they would really love stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
It all came back to me. I was like, oh, there's so many characters here. So the bar is set pretty high for funny.
New Orleans is weird, but what's it like here?
The LA comedy scene is massive. I mean, although I will say it's shrunk a little bit since the pandemic.
Yeah.
So there's not as many shows, not as many mics, but there's still plenty of mics and shows. But the community through the pandemic made the world so much smaller. LA comics all know each other now. Before it was like way more cliquish. Now we all know each other. We're all cool. We're all homies. I mean, maybe not everybody, but
right.
The camaraderie is just awesome now. Everywhere you go, you're going to meet comics that you know.
Yeah.
And the ease of access to getting on shows, it's way easier to get on shows now. On an average night, I'm hitting like an early mic, 7 p.m., then I'm going to a show, 8 p.m. or 9, and then I'm doing a late night mic at Accidental Chaos, then I'm doing the latest night mic, the Midnight Madness at Third Wheel.
Yeah.
And I'm getting up 4 times a night, you know. I'm tripling up, I'm quadrupling up some nights, and it's a good time, good hang. hang, good people, and you know,
I've been out here a couple of times. I was surprised to find how many people know each other.
Yeah,
I mean, I was born and raised here in LA. I know how big LA is. It's huge, and a lot of it is separated.
Mm-hmm.
This is its own little section here, its own little thing here. Like LA feels like hundreds of little worlds.
Oh, it is. It still is.
That's kind of how comedy felt like the first time I came here, which was once before the pandemic.
Okay.
It did feel like it was bigger back then. I talked to people and they're like, there's all this stuff. I don't know these people or I don't know who does that. And now I come in and it's like almost everybody knows everybody. Like, oh yeah, I know Ryan. I know yeah. the, you know, it's like, oh, cool. How many shows were we on just coincidentally?
Yeah, that was cool, man. Like that's because the pandemic did that. The pandemic introduced us all to each other. We had to make nice. We had to be friends. I was running mics in parking lots. People were coming from all over the county and beyond. We all just kind of got to meet each other and talk shop and get some good advice and form this community that we have now. And I'm grateful for the pandemic, as crazy as that sounds. So I don't think I would have a career if it wasn't for it.
Yeah, it definitely feels more welcoming.
Yeah.
Like I said, the first time I was here, I felt like I struggled to get people to like respond or put me on anything. This time around, people are like, oh, yeah, I'll tell this person about you, or like, talk to this person. And like, I had people who were like, oh, hey, yeah, this person told me about you. Come on down. And like, oh, cool.
And being from New Orleans, like, I think it helps because like, that's a city we all want to visit.
Yeah.
If you were from Topeka, Kansas, we wouldn't give a fuck. We'd be like, whatever, dude. Topeka, fuck dude, Topeka.
I tell nobody that I'm from LA when I'm here.
Okay.
In the comedy world.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's good. But it's cool that you actually are a secret LA person that's, you know, grew up here, because I mean that kind of gives you a little more street cred too. Because like if you, I mean, I wouldn't even believe you if you're like, I'm from New Orleans. I'm like, yeah, that's your accent. But although I will say the accents are changing, be like, you ain't from the South.
No, definitely not. And if you catch me buzzed or drunk, my East LA will come out quick.
Oh, good. That's funny. Yeah, that's like me when I'm stoned. I feel like I'm all of a sudden like an old Southern jazz musician.
By the way, I do want to thank you as someone from East LA for having shows in East LA.
Hey, Boyle Heights, man. Yeah. Boyle Heights Bar, Boyle Heights Tavern. I'm there every month.
I love Boyle Heights Bar, man.
That place is great.
Yeah, anytime I get to be on there, it's so much fun. And I really wish there was comedy back when I was living here, you know?
Yeah, there was. It was more in Montebello. Montebello had some spots, but that was like a homies club. Like you had to know those dudes and be like on their good side. Since post pandemic, like I just, these spots fell into my lap. Like,
yeah. How? I was just about to say, how did you end up doing comedy in East LA?
Oh, it's a great story. Max Kestenbaum calls me, great producer, super dope show, all over America. He throws these great shows. He's like, hey, Ryan, I've got this show. It's in Whittier. And I'm like, oh, yeah, Whittier. That's by Downey. He's like, yeah, it's right by your neighborhood. Why don't you produce
it? Oh, he meant Whittier Boulevard, huh?
That's what he didn't know. It was like, and then he's like, oh, he's like 3713 Whittier Boulevard. I'm like, that's not Whittier, but I'll check it out. And I go in there, and it's a classy bar. No parking. I mean, there's like, you know.
Parking's terrible.
Parking's terrible. There's like hobo fucking RVs taking up Whittier Boulevard. There's people shooting heroin in trailers. You know, it's down the street from the cemetery where all the cholos get buried.
Yep.
Calvary. It's a tough spot like to be at, but you know, we make it work. There's, if you walk far enough, you'll find parking. And I went in there, classy bar, owner's a great woman. She's got some mutual friends with me. She's supportive. So I start bringing my stage, my system, my everything there. And we started having shows. And the shows are going great at first. And then kind of petered off.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, man, the shows are sucking. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm just going to kind of take a break from this place. So I took a little break because the turnout was just so bad. But then she went in and remodeled the place and put more money into it. Put a whole DJ booth, speaker system, spotlight, nice. Everything. Pimped the place out. So I came back maybe 3 months ago, did my first show there in like about 8 months, and brought Butch Escobar, who's Felipe Esparza's opener, Johnny Roque, who's fucking,
I love
killer,
Johnny,
fucking hilarious dude.
That dude is hilarious.
And myself, and I think one more person, and man, we just did like a 3-4 man show, wrecked the fucking room, got fat tips, everybody got paid well, and I'm like, all right, dude, this room is back. This room is popping.
Hell yeah.
Next time you're here, I'll make sure you get up.
Hell yeah. How are the audiences different in East LA than, like, let's say in Ontario or the West Side?
Oh, yo, LA's a lot of the same stuff. A lot of Hispanic people where I perform. Like, yeah. If I go to a room and it's a bunch of hipster white fools, I'm going to be like, oh, no, I'm in trouble. What am I going to... I'm going to go into my Eastern European bits.
Yeah.
But I just like my jokes. Like, I like... being the fish out of water. I'm this fucking gringo from Louisiana, yeah, from the country, who came here in 8th grade and had to learn Spanish and had to learn all this stuff on the fly, and I have all these crazy stories about that.
Yeah.
And that's part of like who I am and my comedic identity, and these stories fucking crush in Hispanic areas or in places where people are in close proximity to Latinos. But man, if I go somewhere else, I gotta be a different type of comedian. I gotta,
yeah,
be like, I'm Eastern European, and you know, growing up, you know, this is, my family was a lot like this, where everyone else was like that, and that's different. That's a different side of me, but that's a side of me that's also very unique, I guess. And that's, yeah, kind of what I'm running with now. But I still got the Latin set, I got the Eastern European set, and I've got a set of just one-liners that I do if I'm, you know, performing for like the elderly or a charity. Like, I'm doing a charity show in a couple weeks, and I'm just gonna hit them with the zingers, the, yeah, quickies, and then just you know, save the ethnic stuff for different rooms.
Do you like being in East LA?
Yeah, I like it. I don't feel like I'm being judged. That's why I like, yeah, it here. I don't feel like anyone's trying to like punk me or come at me hard. At first they're like, oh, who's this fucking güero, fucking culero, fucking who's this guy?
Yeah,
he's all bad. And then they're like, oh, okay, I fuck with that guy, he's funny, dude. This guy's eating verga asada, I fucking like that. I like this guy, he's not afraid to make fun of himself. I feel like they're more skeptical at first, and then they hear the jokes, they're like, okay, I like this guy. So, and I feel like I've been welcomed here. Like, you know, my best friends are Mexican American. My girl's Mexican American. We're just, you know, it's been so welcoming, and I don't even feel like a fish out of water anymore here. I speak Spanish, so that helps too. And I never feel like just like I don't belong.
Yeah,
I'm just. Just here's this weird guy who's eating tacos, speaking Spanish.
Yeah, I feel like East LA has always been very welcoming to different people, you know?
Yeah, like, I feel like the gang activity has, like, calmed down a lot.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, I haven't been, like, banged on in a long time.
Yeah.
And that shit, like, was more prevalent whenever I was in my early 20s. Mm-hmm. Or maybe that's just when you're young, you just run into other young guys. And I'm like, fucking, where you from?
A lot of egos.
A lot of that. Yeah. Like, I feel like now it's safer, or I just don't get hit up anymore. And that's nice. I feel safe.
They don't see you as a threat anymore.
I'm not a threat anymore. So that's nice. I got all this gray hair, and they're like,
instead of, where are you from? I said, it's like, can I help you cross the street, sir?
I don't mind that. I don't mind being the old fuck. So, no, LA's a great place, man. It's super welcoming. All the different demographics here are great.
This fucking great, man.
Except for the whiteys. Now, honestly, they're like the toughest nut to crack for me. I think the whites.
Yeah.
Because they're just like, I don't know if I like you. I don't know if I approve of your stuff.
They also get easily offended.
They're the most offended on everyone else's behalf.
Yes, that's exactly what I was gonna say. On everyone,
I don't know if I'm allowed to laugh at this. Like, get out of here. But then I leave LA and I meet these country whites, because I go perform in Bakersfield.
Yeah.
I go up to Northern California, and these are like a different breed. They're great. They laugh at everything. I like when I say I perform all over the country, I don't mean like I perform all over America. I perform in all the country ass places in America. I perform in fucking the sticks, dude. That's where I feel at home. I feel at home, you know, performing in Bakersfield, in Fresno, and these places where there's, you know, more people than missing teeth than there are people with dental insurance. That's my kind of place. I like these fucking shitty rundown places, and I feel like I connect with these people better.
Yeah.
And they like my brand of comedy.
Man, it sounds like you just like performing anywhere.
I do, you know? But I don't like I feel the most uncomfortable with people who are of a different socioeconomic status than myself.
Because maybe they don't understand you.
Those people who make way more money than me and who are just better people than me, I'm just like, I don't know if we connect. I just feel like you're looking down on me.
No, it really sounds like you're loving what you're doing.
I'm going to crack you fucking hipsters. I'm going to get you sophisticated whites one of these days. I'm going to find the way to get you.
Yeah, let me ask you, because it's something I like to ask people. What is it about comedy that you love so much that, you know, that you just can't do without?
Oh, man, I love just like crushing and showing people that if you put your mind to something, you can do it. And that, like, I just love that feeling of these are my little babies, these jokes. And I watch them like go free, and I watch the reactions from people, and they love it. And this is me. These are my paintings. You know, this is my art that I give to people. And then when they love it, I leave the stage, and I love that feeling. Because sometimes I'll be in the green room and I'll just fall on the couch, like, just fall back.
Yeah.
And it just in pure elation, and I'm just like on cloud nine. I'm just so fucking happy. It's like I just hit the game winning shot.
Yeah.
And I get to do that every single time I perform at a club and kill it. And there's no feeling that comes close to that. And that's why I do it.
That's fucking amazing, man. Well, you're very good at it,
man.
And I am very proud to have gotten to share the stage with you.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to have met you, man, because you really like, in New Orleans, I mean, thanks to you, I met a bunch of other people, and they got me on shows and at mics, and I'm really excited to come back now, and hopefully the timing will be right so I can do some of your shows, and I can hopefully get up at the NOLA house, and I'm going to call some New Orleans comics who are out here and see if they can, you know, pull some strings for me and see what happens. But I can't wait to be back there, man.
Well, man, I'm excited to have you back in New Orleans, and I'm excited to see where you go in comedy, because you're killing it, man.
Big things are coming, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah, Ryan, dude, thank you so much for being on the podcast. This has been a lot of fun.
Man, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure hanging out with you, and man, we're gonna hang out soon.
Absolutely,
I know it.
Yeah, you want to take a second, let everybody know where they can find you on social media and all of that.
Yeah, totally. You guys can follow me at ryan.comedian on Instagram. And I've got a YouTube channel, but I don't have that many videos up. But if you want to watch it, I think I'm Ryan Comedian on YouTube, although there's a lot. So maybe if you look up Serbian Comedian, at Serbian Comedian. I don't even know how to find myself on YouTube. You got to be able to spell my last name. RadusinovIC. Ryan Radicinovic in the streets. Ryan.comedian. On the internet. So just find me. I'm out. I'm performing all the time. I got my shows monthly at the Boyle Heights Bar, Strum Brewing Co. in Ontario. I'm also running the open mic downtown LA at the Platform, 1056 South Main Street in the Fashion District. And I think there's one more, Boyle Heights Tavern. That's the last Wednesday of every month. I'll be back there January 24th, and I'm going to be on tour with the Balkan Comedy Night Tour. We're going to be going around America, making people laugh, and you know, I'm all over the place, so just give me a follow, and hit me up if you want me to come to a city near you.
Hell yeah, you guys make sure to follow him. If you've managed to find him online, please let him know, because he can't find himself. Thanks so much, man.
Thanks for having me.
Alright, that does it for this episode of Funny Fucks. Big thanks to my guest, Ryan Radicinovic. He's going to be in town soon, so you can catch him headlining all craft comedy shows on the weekend of March 1st through the 3rd. I can't wait. It's going to be amazing. You guys can't miss it. Now, as usual, I'm not sure when the next episode will be out, but I do have a short list of comedians that you can look forward to this year. In no particular order, I'll have Dwayne Toussaint, Dory Dimples, T-Ray Bergeron, Erica Villarejos, and Lamar Devon. So y'all stay tuned for all of them. Once again, thank y'all so much for listening. I'm your host, Jorge Velasquez. I'll see you next time.
Let me get to a healthy weight. Yeah, then we're going to go to New Orleans and go hard. I'm falling off the wagon. Better believe I will not be sober.